Welcome to Buy Sci-Fi Bite-Sized Finance. I'm Kelly Brothers. I'll be your host, serving up some of the most succulent stories from our region about people, places, and things that impact our community and your financial well-being. I'm sure there will even be a few tasty surprises here and there when the recipe is right. Our goal is to have you learn, think, even laugh a little bit, all calorie-free. I know you'll enjoy what we're delivering right to your kitchen table or dining room or, sir, will you be eating in your car? Wherever you choose to listen. Once again, it is time for Bite-Sized Finance, Buy Sci-Fi as we like to call it, but it's Bite-Sized Finance. It's found wherever you find your favorite podcasts, or it's found every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m., KFBK and KSTE. And today we're doing something a little bit different because I do have that email address where I've gotten some nice suggestions, topics, people to talk to, and some questions about financial planning. Of course, this is sponsored by my company, Cap Trust. And so we do a lot of financial planning. So we get some good questions. We're just going to pull in an expert here and start answering those questions for you. So today I'm proud to introduce to you the one and only Mike Genovese, a.k.a. The Wizard, as he is known around here at Cap Trust. Mike started Genovese Burford & Brothers in its initial iteration back in 1987. I joined Mike back in 07. And of course, we merged with Cap Trust back just about 3 years ago. So, but Mike, one of the best financial advisors in all of California. He's won every award, been on every list. And so, Mike, I thought I'd bring you in and say, welcome to Buy Sci-Fi, my friend. Good to hear from you.
Glad to be here, Kelly. And first of all, I want to say anytime you call anybody an expert, it scares me.
Okay, I'll stop right there then. No experts needed here, but we can talk because everyone will have a different answer for some of these questions, but we want to get into it. Mike, you've been in this business for a long time. So we are not only your robust intelligence, but your experience as well is what we're going to call on today, as a way of attacking some of these questions that people have. And Mike, just who are your typical clients, would you say? Who are the folks you work with the most?
Well, I mean, most of them are, you know, reasonably well off, higher net worth individuals. But, you know, when I started out taking anything that came through the door. And a lot of those people are still clients of mine today. So we have extremely high net worth clients and everything below that. I've never cared too much. I just like working with good people.
No, that's for sure. We don't stand for people who don't hold up a certain end of their bargain. But I should point out, Mike, too, that here at Cap Trust, we not only work with individuals and families, we work with endowments and foundations. We have probably the largest RIA book, registered investment advisory book of retirement plans in the region as well. So we work all three lines of that business. But most of these questions today, Mike, will go directly to families facing, you know, individual conundrums or issues. So I'm going to start off. I had an email. I thought it was kind of funny. It was Susie from Susanville. So I thought I would start off with this one because I was just happy to hear from Susie from Susanville. And so here's the question, Mike. We have a vacation home that we would like to leave to multiple kids/grandkids. What is the best way to accomplish the leaving of a vacation home to the next generation or generations coming up? Take that one if you would.
Well, there's really probably no perfect answer without knowing a little bit more about Susie's property and family, but, you know, where the property in matters, because one of the things that happened back in, you know, back when we had the wildfires and, you know, the state passed Prop 19, the Disaster Relief Act, they took away the ability to transfer property to family members without it getting reassessed for property tax purposes. So that's a big deal in California, where you've owned something a long time that might have appreciated dramatically in value and you're paying very little in property taxes. It's not such a big deal if you're, say, over the state line in Nevada, where they reassess property every 5 years for property tax purposes. So, you know, it's not such a big deal there. But if you do want to transfer something to your family and you want to do it, you know, if you've got a lot of net worth, You probably want to do it sooner than later so that it stops appreciating on your balance sheet. And you could do that through a direct gift, just changing the title and dealing with the reassessment. Or you could do it through a qualified personal residence trust. Those are very common. They're not difficult at all to administer, but with those, you basically put the asset into trust for the benefit of your heirs. You get to retain the right to use the property, occupy the property for the rest of your life or for a period certain, but you do have to maintain it and pay all the operating expenses. So it really depends on how you're wanting to transfer this, when you're wanting to transfer it. And, you know, if you do it through a QPERT, you can get some substantial discounts for gift tax purposes and estate planning purposes. So whether it's a vacation home or your personal residence, the QPERTs are a pretty good idea.
Mike, is there any way to skip a generation on this? In other words, let's say you had a couple in their early 80s. Their kids might be, you know, 60 or in their late 50s. Is there a way to gift it to grandkids so that the kids don't face the exact same issues 20 years out?
Yeah, you could do that with the QPERT, and you could do a generation skip in there. And again, it depends on the value of the property. I mean, you can only do so much on the generation skipping without having to pay some kind of gift tax, you know, on a current basis. But, you know, given the, you know, if you've got multiple heirs, there's the ability to get discounts for lack of marketability and lack of control. So, you know, they are the tool that you would probably want to use.
And Mike and I have both had clients who have done these, and then they actually, especially when you consider the fact you have kids who have different earning capabilities, they will actually set up, in some cases, kind of a trust fund with the money to go just to the maintenance and ongoing upkeep of that property, so that it can be used just for that. Mike, when is the right time to consider putting real estate into an LLC and just giving the kids units of the LLC?
I think the LLC idea is a great one for almost any kind of property other than maybe your primary residence. You know, it does protect you from liability. Somebody slips and falls, whatever, you know, they can't go after the rest of your balance sheet. And the LLC owns title to the property. So when you transfer shares, it's like transferring stock in a company. You're not having to re-register and retitle the property itself. It stays in the LLC titling. You're just transferring the shares of the LLC, which is a lot easier from an administrative perspective to accomplish. So anytime you're dealing with any of this stuff, I mean, you do have to sit back and ask and answer the questions on what are the estate or inheritance tax issues involved? What are the income tax ramifications? And those revolve around whether you get a step up in basis at death or not, whether that's valuable to you. It might not be a big deal in this instance if the kids or grandkids are going to truly keep the property and never sell it. You have to look at the income tax situation of each of the individuals you're transferring it to, because if they are going to sell it, you want to know maybe, you know, what kind of bracket they're going to be exposed to. And then you've got to answer the property tax question. So there's a lot of tax questions coming from different angles, and you should probably assess each and every one of those before making a final decision.
But for families who might have multiple pieces of property, is an LLC, is that a possible kind of holding pot for multiple pieces of property?
It is, but you know, if there are smaller properties, I could see putting multiple properties into one LLC. But if they're more significant assets, just from the liability protections that the LLC offers, you might want to have an LLC for each of the properties in case something happens at one of them, so that all of the assets in the LLC aren't at risk.
Yeah, you're right, though. You got to check out what state they're in, what location they're in. There's all sorts of things to think about. But obviously, anyone who has like a vacation home, they'll often dream or fantasize about a world in which maybe that same vacation home that served their kids so well could serve their grandkids and great grandkids and on and on and on. It's a great idea. Sometimes it works.
Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes. Because, you know, again, if one of your kids now lives in Boise, Idaho, and one of them lives here in Sacramento, who's going to really benefit and use the property? So, you know, you should think about maybe a partnership structure in that instance where there is, you know, some kind of buy-sell agreement if somebody does want to get out.
Great advice, Mike. And by the way, since you mentioned it, I mean, we do have to talk about the change in the estate tax rules coming up here about as we do this podcast today. It's 20 months out. It is significant for a lot of people. That will be the basis of our next question for Mike Genovese, CFP, who is also kind of the guru here at CapTrust in Sacramento. We're going to talk to Mike about a few different scenarios when we come back after this short break on Bite Size Finance.
Hello, this is Scott Thomas with CapTrust in our Sacramento office. I specialize in working with local nonprofits and associations. Annually, we survey private and public nonprofit organizations across the country to better understand challenges they see in today's environment. In our more recent survey, we heard concerns about proper board governance, mission-aligned investment, and how to implement alternative investments. If you would like a copy of the survey or to discuss your organization, look me up, Scott Thomas at CapTrust.com.
Do you have a financial plan for your pets? Protecting your loved ones, both two- and four-legged, is important, and the Sacramento SPCA can help. Join us for a complimentary estate planning seminar and learn how you can provide for your family and your pets while also creating a lifeline for animals in need. Visit sspca.org/estate to view seminar dates and secure your spot for one of our upcoming virtual sessions. That's sspca.org/estate.
Hello, this is Marcel Plumpto with CapTrust in our Roseville office. I specialize in providing retirement plan advisory services to corporate fiduciaries. While we focus on many areas such as investment management and vendor oversight, it's our dedication to working closely with participants that drives my passion for the industry. Without a high level of engagement between advisors and participants, even well-designed retirement plans can fall short of their objectives. Should you have any questions on your retirement plan, please reach out. Marcel Plumpto at CapTrust.com.
Back again on Bite Size Finance, Buy Sci-Fi as we call it, every Sunday, 3 o'clock KFBK KSTE, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Our guest today, Mike Genovese, who started Genovese Burford & Brothers in 87, and I joined Mike and Lon Burford in 07, and we, of course, merged with CapTrust just about 3 years ago. Mike is one of the best advisors any of us have ever known. And so he's helping us answer a few questions that came in through our Buy Sci-Fi Gmail account. So it's Buy Sci-Fi Podcast, BISIFI Podcast at gmail.com. If you want to drop a question or a suggestion or someone we should be interviewing. Mike, let's start with the huge changes to the estate tax code that will happen 20 months out. Go ahead and give us the broad brushstroke of that, and then that'll set up our question.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, back in 2017, during the Trump administration, they passed the Tax Cuts and Job Act, which took the lifetime exemption amount up to $10 million per person. And today, with the inflation factor, that's up to $13,610,000 per person. So a couple today could have over $27 million of net worth, get hit by the Mack truck, and there would be no estate tax liability due. Unfortunately, when they put that legislation in place, they couldn't get a supermajority vote, so it couldn't be permanent. So whether Congress does anything or not, it will sunset on December 31st of 2025 and drop back to $5 million per person plus the inflation factor, which basically means it's going to be $7 million or thereabouts, assuming a 3% inflation rate for this year. So a couple would only have $14 million that they could shelter from estate taxes. And the estate tax rate federally is going to, you know, come in at 40% on anything above that. So it's pretty painful for high net worth individuals. And You know, one of the big issues is it's hard to project what your net worth is going to be when you and your spouse both leave this earth. But if you've got pretty significant net worth today, you should be thinking about maybe using part of that exemption amount, because it's use it at your death or use it during your lifetime. But in this case, when we see the sunset come in, it's use it or lose it, because half of it's going to go away. So it's a pretty big deal. You're going to hear more and more about it the next year and a half. The accountants, the estate planning attorneys, the valuation firms are all getting backlogged. And if you don't start thinking about it and doing something about it sooner than later, you won't get in and get it done.
Yeah. And if you do get in and get some good advice, act on it. Because if you wait till next August or September, you're probably too late, given the backlog that is building up. So, Mike, the question is from JJ in Cool. And it says, my wife and I have built a net worth of a little over $15 million. We have three kids in their late teens. What can I do today to circumvent that major change in estate tax, which is looming 18 months out? What can they do today?
Yeah, again, hard question to answer, not knowing a little bit more about, was it JJ?
JJ, and, yep. So let's say if they have three kids in their late teens, let's just guess.
I would assume that they're in their 50s.
I would say early 50s, yes.
And consequently, I mean, they've got long life expectancies in front of them. Their balance sheet will probably continue to grow. And, you know, again, if we do see the sun setting occur, and it's down to $14 million a couple, I mean, they'd already be exceeding that number. So, you know, the first thing that they could look at doing is evaluating their balance sheet and transferring any assets that they don't believe that they're going to need to live off of. And we touched on it earlier, you know, your residence isn't going to generate any income. Why not do a QPERT, give the residence to the kids today, retain the use of it for, you know, the next 20 years or your lifetime. And, you know, that's a great way to get the appreciation in that asset off of your balance sheet onto theirs. But that could also be the case with, you know, any raw land that you've got, maybe some securities that aren't generating any form of current dividends that you don't think you'll need. So, you know, there's a variety of assets that potentially could be moved off your balance sheets today. And, you know, one of the issues on this is if a couple just gives an asset away, let's say their home is worth, pick a number, $2 million. If they transfer it, well, it would take away $1 million from each of their exemptions. And next year when things sunset, you know, they would not get the utilization of that whole $2 million. So what they should do is what's called transmutation, transfer the asset to one of the spouses and have that spouse make the gift to the kids so that they use part of that exemption. And you should do that entirely. I mean, I know we've gone through it in my household, and I know we've used virtually all of my wife's exemption, and we've used a good portion of mine at this point. So we'll probably use the rest of mine by next year. But if you aren't able to use all of the exemptions, you probably should be using all of one so that you've got at least, you know, the $7 million left for the other that is going to still be available at death or for later gifts.
Right. And so to be perfectly clear about that, Mike, so if someone, you know, today, let's say a couple, and they were to be hit by the proverbial truck today, and $24 million would pass to their kids without estate tax. And January 1st of 26, that number drops from $24 million for the couple. $27 million down to $14 million, let's just say, just for round numbers. But if you give away $2 million worth of that now, you know, you've given away an asset that is hopefully continuing to grow, and that growth is on your kid's balance sheet. But should point out that that doesn't necessarily help you unless you do transmutation, because all right, you gave away $2 million, but that only counts against whatever the number is when you pass.
Right.
It's not like you're giving away the excess as it currently is.
So you really might not be helping yourself out at all unless you're giving away a significant amount of assets as far as, you know, transmutation and trying to use part of one of, or part or all of one of the spouse's lifetime exemption amount. Because if you give away $6 million and it sunsets, well, I mean, and you've transmutated it, the surviving, the one spouse has got $1 million left. And the other one's got, you know, the $7 million left, if that's where it sunsets to. So, you know, you still have $8 million between the two of you. So you really haven't accomplished much of anything.
Yeah.
You need to use more than, you know, the amount that it's going to get sunsetted to make it make sense.
Right. That's the hard part about this. You cannot attack this piecemeal. You're kind of all in or all out if you're going to take advantage of where it stands today.
Yeah. But you are getting the assets off your balance sheet and you're preventing them from growing and expanding your balance sheet. So, you know, there's still a benefit, but to get full utilization, you need to do something more than the exemption amount for one.
Should point out also, just because I had a client in 2 weeks ago in her early 80s who wanted to give a stock portfolio to her kids now. But when you gift, you are also giving the basis to your kids. So what does that mean? That means if you had bought $1 million of Apple stock and now it's $10 million and you gift that to your kids, they are still on the hook for that capital gain. Whereas when you die, this is not estate tax, it's just capital gains tax. When you pass, you get what's called the step up in basis, and that tax liability disappears. So there's a balancing act between the capital gain tax liability and the estate tax liability that everyone has to dance on, right, Mike?
Absolutely. And, you know, if your kids are California residents, it's probably close to a wash between, you know, the California income taxes, the state, the capital gains taxes paid to the federal government. The combination of those two is about equal to what the estate tax liability would be. But, you know, if your kids are not in California, it still might make some sense. But yeah, like our prior discussion on, you know, gifting property, I mean, you do have to look at this not only from an estate tax perspective, but you've got to look at it from a gift tax perspective and also an income tax perspective, because the step up in basis is extremely valuable and is a great planning tool.
Tax, Mike. We're always talking. I mean, we're not. It's a part of our world. Even though we're not supposed to give specific tax advice, it impacts every decision you make financially, one way or another. So, and by the way, not to.
We don't give tax advice, but you know, the closest I've come to it is I did marry a CPA.
That will do. And you're lucky to have Barbara, that's for sure. And by the way, I should point out, if you want to hear more about the pending changes to the estate tax, I would direct you back to an earlier Bite-Sized Finance that I did with Ann Rosenthal of Drobny Law Offices. And you'll find that in the stack of podcasts that we've done. But she gives a great kind of just synopsis of where we stand and some of the things you can do to take full advantage. Back with more questions for Mike Genovese on Bite Size Finance after this.
Hey, this is John Lockwood. I'm a certified financial planner with Cap Trust. And 19 years ago, I made a decision to dedicate my career to helping people make smarter financial decisions. You see, growing up, my parents worked hard, made good money, but they did not understand the complexities of financial analysis, taxes, and estate planning that ultimately led to my parents' worst nightmare, becoming a financial burden on their children. And my calling is to help people flourish financially in any economic environment, to have the fortitude to endure the challenges that life throws at us. I invite you to call my team to discuss our fee-based financial advisory practice to help you live a confident and abundant life. Call us at 916-924-7527 or online at captrust.com.
Kelly Brothers here for Cap Trust. We are fiduciaries.
That's an interesting word. What does that mean? That means that legally we are obligated to put your best interests over our own. Non-fiduciaries don't have that same legal situation. They can sell you something as long as it's suitable, but they don't have to put you in the best thing for you over their best interest. In other words, they can't just sell you a nice annuity with a big fat commission for themselves, even if it's not the best thing for you. We are fiduciaries. We are proud to be fiduciaries. And let me say something too about price. I am always shocked by the fact that there are people who I know will scour the internet for the cheapest flight or the cheapest ticket to a ball game, but they have no idea what they are paying for their advisor. We tell you upfront in black and white, here's what you're paying for what you're getting. Cap Trust here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. Back again on Bite Size Finance. Kelly Brothers along with you. You'll find this wherever you find your favorite podcasts or every Sunday, 3 o'clock, KFBK KSTE. Joined today by Mike Genovese, one of my partners here at Cap Trust, who's been in this business for a long, long time. And we're answering some viewer questions. And if you want to drop a question, or if you would like to suggest a topic or someone we should talk to, drop me an email, buysifipodcast@gmail.com. BISIFIpodcast@gmail.com. So, Mike, here we go. Here's the next question. This one comes from Rancho Cordova. Okay. I am a widower with significant assets, and I'm marrying a woman with grown kids. How do I think about my estate plan when I want to support my new wife if she outlives me, but want the bulk of my estate to go to my kids? This person is not the first person to be entering into a second marriage and therefore complicate an estate plan that maybe had been in motion already. But how do you think about that, Mike, when you're a widower marrying someone who has her own kids, wants to support her if she outlives him, but wants the bulk of his estate to go to his children? How do you think about that?
Well, I would really need to know how big the estate is, because if there's a substantial estate planning issue, then it's maybe a little different answer. But assuming that the estate tax issue is not enormous, it's probably just a bypass trust, and which is commonly referred to as a credit shelter trust. But with a bypass trust, you could name an independent trustee as opposed to having the surviving spouse be the trustee. And the surviving spouse could get income off of that trust for the remainder of their life, potentially have the ability to get at some principal if some major catastrophic event happened financially where they needed to get at some principal. But at the end of the day, the corpus would go to, the named beneficiaries, his children from the prior marriage. Those are that would become an irrevocable trust at his death. So nothing really could get changed without going to, court and having pretty much all parties buy off on a change. But I would think that would be the simplest way to deal with it. The problem is when you've got, marriages, split families like that, you do have a little bit of tug and a pull from the beneficiary wanting its assets to be invested for more income, while the beneficiaries maybe want more growth. So I think you do need to have to be pretty specific in the trust document about, how the assets will be invested, and maybe even set it up like a unit trust where, they just get a specified annual percentage of whatever the value of the portfolio is. And that way you don't have to be overly concerned about whether it's dividend or interest income or coming from principal. But, I think a bypass trust would be probably the most likely option.
And Mike,
if you do have a large estate, you might want to do a Q-tip trust instead. You were going to say something.
Yeah, no, just is there any, let's say this gentleman is marrying a woman who is, 20 years younger than him. So now that that inheritance to the kids is being pushed off by a significant amount of time. You know, I guess in that case, you just make some gifts, outright gifts now, if you want to get them some money now and then allow the rest to be in that bypass trust.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could do anything along those lines. But, you know, if the real concern is to set up the surviving spouse with an income stream for, you know, her life, I mean, the bypass trust is probably the way to go. And you could do additional bequests to the kids and have assets go to them on a current basis. The good thing about the bypass trust is you're not incurring a current inheritance tax issue because, you know, in effect, because she's going to get some income off of it, it falls under, you know, the marital rules where there's an unlimited amount that can be passed to a surviving spouse without estate taxes being imposed. If you wanted to do it a little bit differently, you could do what's called a QTIP trust, a qualified terminable interest property trust. And in that case, you'd probably just use the exemption amount. So right now, that's a pretty big number. As we just talked about in the prior section, it's $13.6 million you could put in. And in that instance, you know, the grantor really has controlled how that's going to all break down over time. And the surviving spouse would get, again, an income stream off of it that would be paid out annually. With the bypass trust, in theory, you wouldn't have to pay out anything to the surviving spouse if they, you know, if that individual had enough coming in off of other assets. Yeah. It would only be paid if needed. So you've got some different ways to go here, but I think the bypass trust is probably going to be the most common and easiest to administer.
So, Mike, let's talk about the trusteeship here, because you're going to want a trustee. Obviously, it should not be one of your kids, probably. It's probably not going to be the new wife either. So you either have to have a friend or a trusted advisor who you want to be the trustee. And by the way, we really can't do that without some very special permissions being put into place. But, you know, and the person has to be of the right age so that they're around to handle the issues as they come up over time. But so let's talk about who you would use as a trustee and the benefit of what is called a private fiduciary in that role as well. Let's talk about that.
Sure. You know, I think private fiduciaries have been, it's been a very common profession in the East Coast, and it's becoming more frequently used out here. You know, bank trust departments and trust departments in general, trust companies, you know, they're very stringent. They, you know, are expensive. They're fairly inflexible. They you know, read documents and the letter of the law, and they don't really, I think, interpret what the intent of, you know, the grantor was as well as they should. They're very conservative in their interpretations. So private fiduciaries are licensed individuals. They, you know, and often they're former accountants or attorneys that have just decided to become a fiduciary, and they are fiduciaries. They've got a legal obligation to, you know, do what's right for the client. And in this case, the client would be both the income beneficiary, the surviving spouse, and the children. So, you know, they would have to balance that and treat both of them fairly. But I love the idea of using private fiduciaries. God forbid it comes into play for me, but we've named one in our trust document. And if that individual, you know, can't continue to serve in that capacity, they can name another private fiduciary. And if all else fails, then we've got a bank trust department as the end backup. But the private fiduciary model is something that I really like. They're usually charging on an hourly basis. They're not charging, you know, a percentage of assets under management. And, you know, it's just a cleaner, more efficient way to go than a bank trust department.
Yeah. And I had a client come in, a situation not unlike this, where his wife had passed and he was thinking of getting married again, and he just didn't want to deal with all that. So he literally just bought a pretty decent sized life insurance policy to benefit the new wife, but left the rest of the estate to the kids as was originally stipulated, which I'm not sure if, given the cost you're going to pay for life insurance at that point in your life, if that's worthwhile or not. But there's many different ways to look at that issue.
Yeah, the life insurance or an immediate annuity that, you know, to pay her an income stream for life, you know, again, probably not the most economic solutions, but, you know, they're clean and simple.
Yeah, and sometimes that's all they want is clean and simple.
They just want to avoid the entanglements of having to have all these people get along somehow.
That's right.
After they're gone.
That's right. Especially when they're the glue that holds it all together anyway. Mike, we got one more section, Mike. We got one or two more questions. We'll be back with more questions from Mike Genovese. You're listening to Bite Sized Finance.
For over 40 years, Drobny Law Offices has been assisting clients properly plan their estates and administer the estate of a loved one. With six attorneys and five paralegals practicing exclusively in estate planning and estate administration, Drobny Law Offices can assist in planning and administering estates from the modest to the largest and most complicated. The main offices are in Sacramento with satellite offices in Stockton, Modesto, San Ramon, Palo Alto, San Diego, and Reno. Unlike attorneys who charge by the tenth of the hour, estate plans are done for a flat fee, including not just the document production, but funding the trust, annual review letters, and routine amendments for life. The attorney-client relationship doesn't end with the execution of your documents. It's just the beginning. Estate planning is an ongoing process. Call 916-419-2100 for a free initial consultation. Drobny Law Offices, your attorneys for life. DrobnyLaw.com.
I'm Father Christopher Calderon. I serve as the president of Cristo Rey High School, a work-study school. As we partner with businesses all throughout Sacramento, we want to take a moment to hear from our students as they share their experience.
My name is Ashley Heredia, and my sponsor is Sutter Health. I love working with them, specifically the pediatrics, and that's the department I work in. I like to see how the doctors interact with the babies and the work the MAs do. Thanks, Sutter Health, for the opportunity.
Thank you again to all our work-study sponsors for believing in and being a part of the work we do.
Hello, this is Will Gabry, and I am an advisor with CapTrust here in the Sacramento area. I'm a busy father of four, and life comes at us fast. As my 20th year of advising clients begin, I want to take a moment and reflect on why I'm thankful to have chosen this profession. Quite simply, I get to help people. I work with clients on wealth management, income, and taxes, to name a few. But even more importantly, I get to be part of great relationships. People often interact with an advisor during life events, and I've been with clients through difficulties and joyous times. Conversations, connections, and trust built mean more to me than anything else. Working at a nationwide firm like CapTrust gives me a team of professionals to assist in all aspects of financial advising. Being part of our local office means great care and service to our clients. If you would like to start a discussion and see how we can partner with you, you can find me at CapTrust.com. Look for Will Gabry, G-A-B-R-I. Thank you.
Back again on Bite Size Finance, Kelly Brothers alongside today, Mike Genovese, one of my partners here at CapTrust in Sacramento. And I think I've mentioned we not only do wealth planning, we also serve a lot of endowments and foundations and actually proud sponsors as well of the nonprofit podcast network that Jeff Holden puts on because he features many of the great nonprofits in the Sacramento area. So we do endowments foundations. We also do a lot of retirement plans as well. So there's a question here, Mike, and I know you've dealt with these in the past far more than I have, so I'm going to bring it directly to you. Here's the question. I own a small but successful business, 41 employees. My kids have no interest in taking over or running this business. What are the pros and cons of utilizing an ESOP to sell the business to my employees? Employee stock ownership program. This question is coming from Dan in Granite Bay. So again, small successful business, kids with no succession plan here. No kids have no interest. How do I use an ESOP to get this business to my employees? Mike, take it away.
Yeah, that's a great question. And ESOPs are fabulous, but they're fairly complex transactions. And you just have to acknowledge that you're setting up, you know, a qualified retirement plan. There's a lot of ERISA issues. And the fiduciary issues, I think, are even more extreme with an ESOP versus a pension plan or 401k plan.
And by the way, we should say it's an employee stock ownership program, right?
Right.
Okay.
But it is a qualified retirement plan, so it falls under ERISA.
Right.
So it really, ESOPs I've seen work extremely well in certain instances and others not so much. If it's a fairly volatile business, a cyclical business, maybe it doesn't fit as well. But, you know, if it's something that's a good old grind it out and make pretty good money every year sort of business, like an engineering firm that has a large backlog of business, or, you know, a distribution company, those it works really well for. So, you know, the administrative costs are there. You got to deal with those. But the beauty of an ESOP is if you sell more than 30% of the stock in your company to an ESOP, you as the seller have the ability to roll over all of that money tax deferred into what are called qualified replacement securities. So, yeah, that's kind of a key number. The ESOP needs to own at least 30%. It's difficult to just say, I'm going to sell 100% of my company to the employees through an ESOP, because, you know, at that juncture, you better be prepared to be the bank and carry a bunch of paper. You know, with ESOP transactions, banks are typically willing to lend, you know, 40 or 50% of whatever the appraised value of the business is. So they'll finance part of it for the buyers, for the ESOP to purchase your shares, but they're not going to give 100% financing. So, you know, you got leveraged ESOPs, and that's usually the case, and unleveraged ESOPs, if you're looking at selling it to your employees, I doubt that they've got all the money in the world to pay cash for the business. Yeah, so that's one of the bugaboos on these things.
So Mike, walk through the numbers. So let's say, just to throw out easy numbers, let's just say the business is valued at $100 million, just again to have round numbers. And
that's a pretty good valuation for a 40%.
Yeah, you're right. Let's just say $40 million. How about that?
Okay.
$40 million. Okay. So let's just say you're selling, well, you need to do over 30%. So let's say you're doing 50%. Let's say you sell 50% of your company to the ESOP. In other words, a valuation of $20 million. Take it from there. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Yeah, so the ESOP borrows the money. They buy your shares. You get the $20 million, and you can go buy replacement securities with those dollars. Replacement securities are basically any stock issued by a domestic corporation that has a tier of taxation. So you can invest it in real estate investment trust or master limited partnerships, things that are passed through entities. It would be a taxable C corp. So you could put it in Amazon or Apple, or, you know, a combination of almost any underlying securities that you want. Or you can buy the debt instruments. So you could buy a bond from one of those entities. And so your cost basis in the company you're selling is rolled over into those securities. And you've got up to a year after the sale to purchase those securities. So your basis is rolled into those. You've avoided the tax, at least for now. And whenever you sell those securities, it's as if you're selling your company stock at whatever the appreciated value of it is at that point in time. So if you didn't pay any, if you started your company from scratch, you didn't, you know, invest a penny in it, you've got zero basis. Whenever you sell those securities, it will be a taxable event. It'll be a long-term capital gain. Or if you've invested in a bond and it matures, that's a taxable event. So if you're going to invest your money in bonds because you want a predictable income stream, you better buy long-term non-callable bonds that won't mature until after you or your spouse leave this world, because then you'd get a step up in basis and you would avoid all the tax. But, you know, the ESOP now owns half the company. You still own the other half of the company, but your employees, you know, the operating income from the business is going into the ESOP, and half of it, and it's used to amortize the loan at the bank. And the company can make contributions to the ESOP like they could to a 401k plan or a pension plan. Those contributions are tax deductible, so that can be used to amortize the debt as well. So really, they're getting to purchase the company with pre-tax dollars, which is a beautiful thing, as opposed to using having to, you know, earn $35 million, pay tax on it to come up with the 20 to pay off the loan. I mean, all they got to do is put $20 million into the plan, get the tax deduction, and pay off the loan with those proceeds. A lot of times I've seen ESOPs go in step transactions where, you know, maybe 35% gets sold to it the first go around. The owner sticks around. He's still there watching the shop. And once that first loan gets paid off, then they can go to the bank and they can borrow a higher percentage, probably, because now there's real equity in the business. And the bank's not going to look back at the seller to ask for personal guarantees or have him put up his replacement securities as collateral for the loan in case the company collapses. So, you know, they are complex transactions, but they can work extremely well. Oftentimes, you know, a big chunk of the company is sold to the ESOP, and maybe a smaller chunk is actually sold to a couple of key individuals who go out and get financing on their own to purchase some shares so that they have a little bit more operational control over what happens with the business.
So huge tax advantages, but balanced out by complexities that have to be taken into account if you want to.
And I've had some clients where, you know, the company has ended up being 100% owned by the ESOP. And when you think about that, that company is now a tax exempt entity because all of its earnings are going to the ESOP, and the participants in the ESOP, you know, are seeing, in effect, their retirement plan balances just mushroom. They'll pay taxes eventually when they take their money out of the ESOP, just like you or I would out of our 401k plan. But in the interim, there's no level of taxation for that entity.
Not a bad deal. Mike, we can't leave. We have 1 minute left. We can't leave without asking you your three pillars of great financial management. What are they, sir?
Well, golly gee, Dr. Fisher, my first investment professor in grad school, said there's really only three things you need to know to get rich in America. You need to understand how compound interest works. You need to have one mortgage, and you need to have one wife.
After that, it's great.
Everything should work out fine.
That's right. So Dr. Fisher says one spouse, one mortgage, compound interest. All you need to know. Mike carries that forward today. He's a proud Aztec from San Diego State. And we hear that mantra many times around here. Mike, thanks for joining us, my friend. Great to have you on. As we get more questions, we will bring Mike back on to help us answer some of these. But I want to thank everyone for listening in to Bite Size Finance, and feel free to reach out at buysci5podcast@gmail.com. And of course, remember, every Sunday, 3 o'clock KFBK or KSTE, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You've seen billboards, you've seen the buses, you've seen the incredible signage at Golden One Arena. Something wrong? Call Ann Fong. We didn't have anything wrong, but we called her anyway. She's our next guest on Bite Size Finance. Every Sunday, 3 o'clock KFBK. Or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening to Buy Sci-Fi Bite Size Finance. If you liked what we served up today, please give us your rating, subscribe, and by all means share. Music for the show produced locally by Kitty O'Neill and her band Skylar's Pool.
Under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, this podcast is defined as an advertisement and includes an uncompensated testimonial by a Cap Trust client. Please be advised that clients' experiences as described in this podcast do not necessarily represent the experience of other clients. The discussions and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and are subject to change without notice. This podcast is intended to be informational only. Nothing in this podcast constitutes a solicitation, investment advice, or recommendation to invest in any securities. CapTrust Financial Advisors is an investment advisor registered under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. CapTrust does not render legal advice. Thanks again for listening to Bite Sized Finance.
Kelly Brothers here for CapTrust. We are fiduciaries. That's an interesting word. What does that mean? That means that legally we are obligated to put your best interests over our own. Non-fiduciaries don't have that same legal situation. They can sell you something as long as it's suitable, but they don't have to put you in the best thing for you over their best interest. In other words, they can't just sell you a nice annuity with a big fat commission for themselves, even if it's not the best thing for you. We are fiduciaries. We are proud to be fiduciaries. And let me say something too about price. I am always shocked by the fact that there are people who I know will scour the internet for the cheapest flight or the cheapest ticket to a ball game, but they have no idea what they are paying for their advisor. We tell you upfront in black and white, here's what you're paying for what you're getting. CapTrust here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom.